Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. The story so far. Tesca, Yvette, and Sidois stopped Ambrose Fane from recapturing them by playing upon the religious beliefs of the pilgrims they are traveling with, but at the cost of rousing the suspicions of the sword priests leading the caravan. Chapter 19. "Thank you all for coming," Jeline called to her guests. She was a slight woman, of middle years aggressively concealed beneath hair dye and makeup, wearing an enormous gown of ruffles and bows. "I hope everyone is having a good time. I can't tell you what a delight it is to have you all here."
"Isn't that gown a bit elaborate?" Tesca asked Allie as the crowd applauded their host.
"Oh, it's the height of Malakan fashion," she assured him, "from 3 years ago. Jeline loves anything from Malachi. You bring her any sort of objet d'art from there, she's your friend for life. She feels it's her duty to bring a little culture and sophistication to this pirate town, so she brings out one of these outfits for each party." She gave Jeline a sad smile. "Too damn hot in the frieze to wear something like that. Just watch. About halfway through the party, she'll have a servant following her around with a fan, fixing her makeup and catching her if she faints."
"Just a shade above the waterline?" Tesca asked. Allie gave his arm a squeeze.
"You're catching on."
"Now, I have a special treat for you," Jeline called, signaling to one of her servants to open a set of double doors that had remained closed so far.
The crowd moved forward, curious, as Jeline strode through them, beckoning all to follow her. Jeline had turned her parlor into a makeshift concert space. Chairs had been arranged in rows on one side of the room. On the other side was a gleaming piano, producing murmurs of excited surprise from Jeline's guests.
"One of Monsieur Pellier's finest creations," Jeline crowed. "Let me take this moment to thank my dear friend Alessandra Fane, who helped make this possible."
"You bought that for her?" Tesca asked as fresh applause erupted, this time directed at Allie, who beamed at the crowd and blew a kiss to Jeline, then steered Tesca toward a pair of seats in the back row.
"Not exactly," Allie told him in a low voice as they sat down, the other guests moving around them, chatting with anticipation. "I just made a few arrangements that brought the price down to something that Jeline could live with."
She leaned in close, resting her head on his shoulder.
"It's an investment, and one my father's very pleased with," she confided, whispering in his ear, her breath sending chills down his spine. "Jeline's goodwill opens more than a few doors for our people here."
She made a slight giggle.
"He's been wanting to get that old thing out of our home for years anyway."
Tesca turned to look at her, their noses almost touching.
"Oh, that's cold. What will she do if she finds out it's a fake?" he whispered with a smile.
She gasped and drew back, slapping his arm playfully and giving him a mock frown.
"It's a real Pellier," she whispered back. "It's just a bit older than it looks. My grandfather bought it, or maybe one of my great uncles, I don't know. I took lessons on it when I was a little girl, but I didn't have the patience for music. So it's been gathering cobwebs for years back home. A good dusting and a fresh coat of varnish, and Jeline's none the wiser. She'd never know the difference anyway."
She leaned in again, delighted at her own cleverness.
"The hardest part was finding someone in Narlos who can keep it in tune. That I had to pay for myself. Father wouldn't hear of it."
Tesca stared into her green eyes and leaned closer. She froze, eyes widening, her breath caught in nervous anticipation. Then he brought his lips close to her ear, smelling the hint of perfume.
"It's nice to see how much trouble you'll go to for your friends," he whispered.
Her laugh began more like a gasp, a shuddering release of tension. She slapped his arm again as he grinned at her.
"Sorry," he told her. "Sometimes I get carried away."
Allie scowled at him, but the sparkle in her eyes told him that her annoyance was not entirely genuine.
"Oh, it's like that, is it? I guess you learned a bit more down there than spying on rooftops."
"Actually, this part I'm just making up as I go along, but it seems to be working so far."
Her smile began slowly, then grew wide, brimming with satisfaction, appreciating the discovery of a worthy opponent and anticipating a long match ahead. Then she turned away, hearing Jeline's enthusiastic applause at the entrance of the pianist.
"Who's that?" Tesca asked her.
"Gray and Wilby. Turns out he's the same fellow I hired to tune the bloody thing.
Tesca chuckled. Well, that's good. We'll get to judge both of his professions at the same time.
Careful, darling, Allie warned. You actually sound like you're starting to enjoy yourself.
Maybe I am, he admitted, as Wilby made a flourishing bow to the audience, blowing a kiss to Jeline.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My first piece tonight will be a Tarrendon folk song, The Rose in Spring.
Tesca? Allie asked, seeing the sudden change in his expression. Is something wrong?
No, he said after a moment. I just haven't heard that song for a long time.
It turned out Wilby was more than passable at both of his professions. The notes that came from the piano were clear and precise, the chords balanced and sounding true. In short order, most of the guests were nodding their heads or tapping their feet. The Rose in Spring was not an uncommon song in the Frieze. To Jeline's embarrassed shock, some guests even sang along at full volume, as if they were sitting in a dockside tavern. Tesca knew the words by heart, but he did not sing along. Instead, he closed his eyes, struggling against the unexpected assault. Then, as the song picked up speed, amidst the voices he heard another accompaniment join in, a fiddle, dancing through the tune with practiced skill. His eyes flew open as his head came around to see his father standing beyond the campfire, his bow a blur as he brought the tune to its tumbling conclusion. Around them, the assembled crowd of wagoneers cheered and applauded, roaring out the lyrics, led as always by Moira, who danced about the fire, carrying Rose in her arms. Grinning with delight, he sprang up to join them.
"Don't get too close to the fire, Aiden," Moira called to him.
"I won't," he promised, bounding along in their wake. The music reached its crescendo, then suddenly fell off, and an awkward hush fell over the crowd. Dunstan Carrick waited another beat, then began the last refrain at half speed. This was his own variation to the tune, turning the riotous joy and celebration to bittersweet reflection, a sobering reminder to treasure each spring that comes.
"He's thinking about Mother," Aiden realized, and he couldn't understand, after hearing it so many times, how he had never grasped that before.
The wagoneers on this journey were new hires, unfamiliar with Dunstan's variation, and they looked puzzled. But then Moira, a sad smile on her face, began to sing, guiding them into the slower tempo. Their voices rose, gathering around the lonesome notes of the fiddle. And for the last, Dunstan drew the final note out, pulling the bow slower and slower, letting the sound linger, growing ever fainter. Even after he'd lifted up the bow, Aiden felt he could still hear the echoes of that note hovering in the air around him. The crowd began to stir, not a few of them with tears on their cheeks, their applause sporadic at first, but gradually swelling, joined at last by cheers. Dunstan smiled at his people and gave a gracious bow. Then, as always, he gestured with the bow toward Moira, pulling a round of cheers from the crowd for her.
"All right, you lot," Duncan called out. "Call it a night, we will. Half a day's haul and we're there. End's in sight, but plenty of work awaiting us with the dawn, so let's get some sleep. We'll need it."
With good-natured groans and a last smattering of applause, the workers dispersed, returning to their circled wagons. Dunstan packed away his fiddle and walked up to Moira, Rose, and Aiden.
"I was dancing, da!" Aiden shouted. "Did you see me?"
"Hi," said his father, ruffling the boy's hair. "A regular jack of the dance you are. Can you hold this for me a bit?"
He held the fiddle case out to Aiden, who took it with excited reverence.
"I'll take her," Dunstan said to Moira, reaching out for Rose. "Been holding her all night, you have."
"Still weighs next to nothing," Moira said, passing the toddler to her father. "Don't mind." "Again, again," Rose demanded. "It's my song."
"Aye, rosy girl, that it is. You know why?" Dunstan asked. "Because it was your mother's favorite."
"The rose in spring, weedle deedle wing," Rose sang, the words only half remembered.
Dunstan laughed as he waggled his beard in her face, making the child squeal with delight.
"The rose in spring and robins on the wing," he repeated, half chanting, ruffling her black hair. "All the girls in her family were named after flowers. Did you know that? Your mother was Violet, she was, her sister Daisy, but for your name, she wanted Rose. And why?"
"Her favorite song,"
Rose shouted. Dunstan laughed again, stomping around the fire, singing the song and tickling his daughter at the same time, which produced further shrieks of glee. Dancing in place, mimicking his father's steps, Aiden looked up at Moira.
What song was I named after?
Moira smiled down at him.
Oh, no song for you, sweet boy. Got your grandfather's name you have.
Then, seeing his sudden pout, she knelt down in front of him and cupped his cheek with a gentle hand.
There, there, no reason to sulk. Aiden Carrick was a wonderful man, fair and just with his tenants he was, and sharp as a pin. Smartest man in County Ferlin. No one ever outsmarted him on a deal. Could sell sand to a keffie, he could. Believe me, lad, that's a name to be proud of.
Then she stood up, frowning.
Threw his name in the fire all the same you did. How do you think he'd take that if he'd known?
Horrified, Aiden backed away, unable to bear her scorn.
Tesca, she called after him. What kind of name is that, anyway?
He bumped into someone and whirled around.
Tesca, are you listening to me? Allie whispered.
What? He said, glancing around Jeline's hall. The guests were rising from their chairs and exiting the room.
Did you have a drink or two when I wasn't looking? What's wrong with you? She asked him. The performance is over.
No, he said. I can still hear it. That last note. He turned in place, trying to pinpoint the source of the echo, but it seemed to come from nowhere.
Can't you hear it? She sighed. Come on, Tanner Jack himself's shown up. We can talk to him about that keffie merchant. You know, the one your grandfather sold sand to.
Tesca stared at her.
What did you say?
She glared at him.
Wool gathering again? Oh, what's it matter? You never listen anyway. Always got something more important to do, somewhere more important to be. Someone you'd rather be with.
This isn't real, he said. None of it. I'm dreaming.
Dreaming, are you? Allie snapped, looking angrier than Tesca had ever seen her. So it won't mean anything when I do this.
Tesca saw only the briefest flash of the blade as she stabbed him in the stomach. Pain blazed through his body, bursting out of him with a yell as the world shook. His eyes flashed open, blue sky whirling overhead. He was being moved, his litter being lowered from the wagon.
Don't jostle him, Yvette called.
Her face swam into focus, blocking out the sky. Her hand cupped his cheek, the touch so cool he gasped at the sensation.
Can you hear me, Travis? Travis!
Where?
We're at the Abbey, Yvette said. We've made it.
La Clémence de Fil, he heard Sidois say with relief, though he couldn't see him. You have hung on for 2 days, but we're here at last.
Praise the sun, called a voice near the top of his head, the words taken up by some other voices farther off.
Tesca forced his gaze upward, seeing Liam's red beard looming over him. The acolyte was carrying one end of the litter, maneuvering it through a crowd of people, gaunt faces appearing and disappearing amidst a shuffling mass of dirty, pale clothes. Liam glanced down at Tesca and gave him a fierce smile in greeting.
Thought the fever would take you last night, brother, but you have more strength than any of us knew. The sun still plans for you, praise him.
He looked up to the man who was carrying the other end of the litter.
Steer for the first clear table, and we'll set him down there.
Make way,
Sidois called out, moving ahead of the litter and clearing a path.
Make way for the sun,
called another voice, one that Tesca recognized, the invalid pilgrim who had whipped his fellows into the frenzy that drove Ambrose off.
His name. What's his name? Tesca muttered. Never found out. Sloppy work.
What was that? Yvette asked, leaning in close.
Galen, we'll want to know.
What's that he's saying, sister?
I can't tell.
Make way for the sun, the call came again,
repeated by some, but questioned by others, filling the air with cacophony. Then the litter's movement changed. Tesca was raised up, then lowered down, his back settling against a hard, smooth surface.
I'll be right back, sister. Have to gather materials for a fresh poultice.
Bless you, Liam.
Directly overhead, the sun turned the milling forms about him into silhouettes. The world continued to spin around him, individual sights and sounds becoming clear for an instant, then sinking back into the chaos.
He rose into the air and smote the slavers with his voice.
Blasphemy! The sun would not come to us as a man broken, and he has no sword!
Father, daughter, and son! Father,
daughter and son. Father, daughter and son. They have come to us!
Back away there! Get back! Give him some room!
Beneath all the chatter was a constant drone, many voices praying in unison. It was all around him, hovering in the air like the echoes of the last note on his father's fiddle. He could not comprehend the words, but the call and response rhythm drew him in, and he drifted on the ebb and flow of the chants. His head slowly lolled to one side, and he stared blankly ahead, ignoring the shadows passing before him. Beyond them, however, a solid, dark shape loomed, drawing his attention. Tall stone walls, the crenellated tops chewing the sky like teeth. Teska's eyes went wide as he stared at the structure, and suddenly he struggled to sit up.
"Tavis, what are you doing?" cried a woman's voice, and there were hands on his shoulders gently restraining him, pressing him back down toward the litter.
Teska wrenched himself free and sat up, barely feeling the stab of pain. His vision narrowed, as if he was staring at the abbey through a telescope. Then the words burst out past foam-flecked lips.
"Been here before!"
The noise around him suddenly dropped away.
"He speaks! Been here before!"
Teska repeated, still staring at the abbey's gatehouse.
"Father! My lord! I didn't know!"
"He calls to the Father! The Son has returned to us!"
"The blue light!"
Teska groaned, gesturing feebly toward the abbey.
"Liam!" Yvette called. "Help me!"
"Coming!"
called a voice from somewhere farther off. Then larger hands were pressing him down, too strong to resist, and the last of Teska's surge was spent. His eyes rolling back in his head, he sagged limply into Yvette's arms.
"Blue light!" he moaned. "In the Hall of Demons!"
There was another frozen moment, the hands upon him going very still.
"What did he say, sister?"
I don't know."
"Rose!"
Teska wailed, tears streaming from his eyes.
"Wake up! You've got to wake up! Make the blue light again!"
"Who's Rose?"
It's a pet name he has for me, my pale rose."
"Oh, well, prepare another poultice for him, I will. Then we'll—"
"How is he, Liam?"
came a man's voice, close. Teska knew the voice, but the name wouldn't come.
"Still with us?" "Still with us, praise the sun."
"Praise the sun," the voice replied after a moment. "Time for your penance, it is. Report to the commander."
"Aye, mixin' a fresh poultice I am. Just be a moment."
"You will report to the commander now," the voice corrected, low and sharp with anger.
"Second time you've disobeyed, Liam. There'll not be a third. Is that clear?"
"Aye, Donal."
"Your penance is doubled. Tell the commander so."
Teska felt a change in the light and sound around him as Liam moved away.
"Sister," Donal said to Yvette in a more gentle tone, "may I see his wound?"
If she gave any reply, Teska didn't hear it. The tugging of the dried mixture from his skin was agony, but it made little difference to him now, one drop in a brimming bucket. Even in his delirium, he could smell the rot as the poultice came free. There was a sigh.
"I'm sorry, sister," he heard Donal say to Yvette. "There's naught else to do for him."
Yvette moaned, her voice cracking.
"There is nothing else?"
"Sister, your husband's held on far longer than anyone's expected. He must love you very much to fight so long. But clear it is, he's been called to the final muster."
"No," she sobbed. "We've come so far. We made it all the way here."
"I'm very sorry," the sword priest told her, "but know that his struggle has not been in vain. The Sun, praise him, has need of warriors in both this world and the next. Travis's strength will surely grant him a valued place among the Sun's legions."
Teska saw a dark shape on the edge of his vision grow larger, and when Donal spoke again, his voice was much closer.
"May the Triad accept you into their care, Travis. May the daughter take your pain and speed your passing. May the father weigh your sins and judge your fate, and by that judgment, may the Son best know where to place you in his armies."
He felt Donal's hand touch his forehead, the rough calluses dragging against his inflamed skin like sandpaper. Then Donal stepped away.
"There are some tents set apart to await the final muster. A private matter it is, a man's passing, though as his wife you may stay with him until the end."
"Thank you,"
said Yvette helplessly.
"Brother Rene, report to the labor master for your assignment."
My assignment? Sidduah protested. I am staying with my son.
Not your son, Donal corrected. Your daughter's husband he is. His wife may stay with him. No doubt she'll have need of your comfort after his passing. But until then, share in the labors as one of us you will.
After a pause, Donal spoke again, calling after him.
Oh, and Brother René, after you're settled in, be interested to hear more about this slave ship you escaped from, I would. Sinners should not go unpunished.
If Sidduah made any reply, Tesca couldn't hear it.
Rorik, Timon, Donal said, turning, take up the litter and bring him to the mustering tents, then report to the commander.
There was a pause.
Members of Liam's squad you are. You'll be the ones to administer his penance. Understood?
Aye, Donal, both men said in unison.
Tesca felt himself being lifted up, the quality of his pain changing as the hard table fell away beneath him, his body sagging into the litter's hard fabric. The noise around him swirled into a dull roar once again as he was carried into the throng of penitents. But after some time passed, the noise receded, the blur of crowds around him dissipating. They were rising, traveling up a slight incline, moving up and away from the camp.
Not much more food here than when we left, Rorik muttered in Terrandon. Has she been sending out foragers?
Saw Padraic I did when we came in, Timic replied in the same tongue. The abbot's provided some food, but it won't be enough for long, so she's sending them out again. More of them and further afield, looking for those who haven't made the gracious gift yet.
Good, Rorik grunted. Gives the sheep more to do.
They carried Tesca in silence for a short time.
Donal's quite the bee in his breeches, he said finally.
He's reason enough, Timon chuckled. Half thought he'd ride that messenger's horse here straight away, I did, or send one of us up here with the news.
Not Donal, Rorik replied. Never one to divide the squad, not while we're playing shepherd. Better, perhaps, if he'd sent Liam on ahead with the news. He'd not be receiving double penance.
Aye, there was a pause. When it's time for that, will you use a light touch?
That led to another pause before Rorik replied.
No, he said at last. Be watching for that, Donal will. Best do it right and be done.
Might put some sense into Liam, eh?
He could use some, Timon agreed. Liam's been out of sorts even before we started out. He was the one what saw them on the road when they left the city, remember? Grumbling the whole day through about them, he was, even before he learned the girl's true nature.
Rorik laughed, then spoke in a deeper voice, doing a fairly accurate approximation of Liam, which made Timon laugh as well.
Hair red as my sister's it was, made me think of home. Didn't make a gift, just looked down at the camp like we were no better than worms. And they didn't just refuse to make the gift, did they? No, they argued about it. Called me a bloody tax collector, they did.
Abruptly, both acolytes stopped. Tesca could see Rorik looking ahead at someone.
Sorry, sister, Timon said, abashed, switching to free speak. My apologies.
Anyway, he went on, returning to his native voice in a subdued tone, that left Liam in a fine mood, didn't it?
Aye, Rorik agreed, also sounding chastened. Then we find out the next morning the little ginger was an elf all along. Liam took it harder than Donal, remember, once he realized that the little fiend had ridden right past him, only a few feet away, and he never noticed.
Wait, what did you say?
Tesca heard another voice call from somewhere ahead. The swaying of the litter stopped as the two men froze. The voice moved closer. Yvette.
Yes, I can speak Terrandon, she scolded them. How else did you think I speak to my husband? If you can't stop gossiping, she went on, then you can at least include me in the conversation. Did you say that there is an elf here?
Timon made a strangled grunt.
It's not for me to say, sister. Sorry I am for letting my mouth go on at a time like this.
Tell me, Yvette demanded, or do I have to bring this up with Donal? Like as not, he'll let me watch the pair of you discipline each other in turn.
The two acolytes remained silent for a moment. Then Rorik spoke in a rueful tone.
It's a message Donal received from the man who, donated his horse to us the morning we set out from Maipur.
A very righteous deed for which he shall be rewarded, I'm sure, Yvette said. What was this message?
One of the scholars who rode past us up to the abbey as an elf in disguise, Rorik went on.
Aye, sister. Message described her and her companions to the letter. Liam recognized them as four who'd ridden past him the day before.
And this is the news that Donal is reporting to this commander of yours? Yvette asked. Is it genuine, this information? Who sent it?
Don't know, sister. Didn't read it ourselves. Whether Donal believed it entire or not, knew the commander had to be told he did.
I see, Yvette replied. And that's all?
She gave a quiet sob.
What is this world coming to? We struggle and fight to get here, pushing my husband to the brink of death, and one of those things rides right up to the abbey without difficulty? I suppose she's inside those walls right now.
There was a pause as Yvette got herself under control.
I appreciate your candor, my brothers. Rest assured, I will not share this with Donal. Now, let us proceed with the task at hand and bear my husband to these tents without further delay.
Aye, sister, both men said, and Tesca felt the litter lurch and sway once more as they continued up the hill.
This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher. If you'd like to learn more about the Freeze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.